Good morning, church. Welcome, and especially to the visitors. If there are any visitors here this morning, please just raise your hands. We've got a little card that we'd like to give you to know a bit more about you. It's one at the back. And when the offering plate comes around, visitors, that's all you need to put in. The rest of you, not so much. Okay. Ian's going to do the reading this morning. He's reading the whole of the Old Testament. Feels like that. There are three passages, two out of Exodus and one out of Deuteronomy. So the first one is Exodus 16, verse 1 to 4, and then reading from Exodus 16, 35, right through to 17, verse 6, and then finally Deuteronomy 34, verse 4. Thanks, Ian.
Okay, Exodus 16, bread from heaven. They set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we have died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out of this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that they may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not." And then from 35. The people of Israel ate the manna 40 years, till they came to a habitable land. They ate the manna till they came to the border of the land of Canaan. And Omer is the 10th part of an ephah. All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt? To kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried to the Lord, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, and the people will drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And then Deuteronomy 34:4. And the Lord said to him, "This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there."
Thanks, Ian. So this last Wednesday, I attended the Grade R Kiddies concert at Kenridge Primary. I was there with my little nephew. It was very cute, all these little kids dancing around on the stage and everything. And at one point, they were playing the song Crocodile Rock, and the whole audience was clapping along. So I turned to my brother and I said, "Yeah, the audience is giving their age away by clapping along to the song." My brother turned back to me and he said, "No, you're giving your age away. It's from Romeo and Juliet." I'm like, oops. So tomorrow is my niece's 8th birthday. I'm going to try not to embarrass myself too much again. She's having a rock star party. I have no idea what that means. But she's been planning it since her 7th birthday. She's been planning what she's going to wear, who she's going to invite, the theme, the cake, everything. But even the invite list keeps changing on a daily basis. I've cracked a nod. Mark's status is still pending. So we'll see by tomorrow whether he's actually invited or not. But all this planning and all this fuss, and even the parents are getting caught up in the planning for this party. It's only going to be about 2 hours long. She doesn't seem to be deterred. She just loves all the planning and all the fuss. But I think of poor Moses. He was planning and, you know, leading the people for 40 years through the wilderness. He stood up to Pharaoh, he led the people out of Egypt, and then they're wandering in the desert. And then finally, His party is about to start. He can see the promised land. It's there. It's for him to see. Just as he's about to go there, God says, no, your journey ends here. Joshua can take it from here. I mean, the poor guy. He'd been listening to the Israelites moan and groan for 40 years, whinging and whining, and every time they had a problem, he went to God. God sorted it out. And then finally, when his day comes, he can't go. Nice. It's like all Moses' efforts were just scuppered at the last minute. It reminds me of something that happened to me when I was about 8 or 9 years old, so similar age to my niece. I love to bake, love making cakes, anything like that. And I had been planning a tea party, a massive tea party. I'd invited my grandparents, my neighbors, even my brothers had been told to be nice and come to my tea party. So it was going to be a big thing. And I spent weeks planning this. I went through all my recipe books, and that weekend I made chocolate cake and muffins and scones and everything I could think of I made. My mom's kitchen looked like a chocolate flour bomb had exploded, but that was okay. And then I started setting the table using her best china and little serviettes and everything. And she went down to fetch my grandparents. And while she had gone and while I was setting the table, my dog at the time, Spencer, jumped from the couch onto the tea trolley I had laden with all the food. And as he jumped, because it was on wheels, it sort of glided into the middle of the room. So there was this pug stranded on a tea trolley. And he ate everything. Every last crumb. It was like the tea trolley had had nothing on it. So I came into the room and saw this rather round, green-looking pug. Picked him up, put him on the ground, and he threw it all up. All my efforts literally wasted. I was in tears. My brothers were laughing. And the dog just never quite recovered from I can now call it the pug party. But Moses, it was like God had scuppered his plans. God had turned down his tea party. So what was the deal? What was the 40 years wandering in the desert, putting up with the harsh conditions, putting up with the whinging and whining of the Israelites? Why did they wander for so long, for 40 years? So this morning I'm going to speak about three key reasons for their wandering, and three reasons that the Israelites just didn't get. The first is that the people couldn't get over Egypt. They couldn't get Egypt out of their DNA. They actually couldn't live free. They wanted to go back to Egypt, to live as slaves. Although they were physically free, they were still living in Egypt. They were still longing for the past, clinging to what was. I mean, now they're living in freedom. God saved them from Pharaoh and the Egyptians. But they still wanted to go back. I mean, why? Well, in Egypt, it was familiar. They knew what to expect in Egypt. They knew what they would eat. They knew what they would drink. They even knew that they would be beaten when they slacked off. They knew that they would be exploited. But it was familiar. They didn't know what to expect in the wilderness. And because of that, they didn't even realize that God was providing everything for them. They didn't realize that they were actually free. They were still clinging to the past. They couldn't taste the manna that God had provided for them. Their thirst wasn't quenched with the water that God provided them. For 40 years, they had enough. And as a girl, I think for 40 years, they didn't need new shoes. I mean, they just wandered in the desert and their shoes never wore out. They had everything they needed, but they couldn't experience the freedom. They couldn't let go. They clung to their Egypt. And I think the same is true for us. It's definitely the same for me. We are still clinging to our Egypt. We're still clinging to the thing that enslaves us. And our Egypts might be different. For some, our Egypts might be our stuff. We might have huge amounts of debt because we're living beyond our means, because stuff is important to us, the things that we have. We think that somehow the things that we have are going to bring us fulfillment, bring us happiness, fill us whole in our lives. Where in reality, the stuff is actually what's enslaving us. But we struggle to let go of it. We still think life's some sort of game, and at the end of it, the winner is a person that has the most stuff. We just cling to that which is enslaving us. We want to go back to Egypt. We want to go back to where things are important rather than Jesus being important in our lives. And for others, our Egypts might be our jobs. We may hate our jobs. We may hate the environment. We may hate the fact that we're always chasing targets. We're always having to trample on competitors or our staff just to do what's best for the business. But we continue to do it because our jobs are our Egypts. They define us. That job, better than no job, that job brings in an income. That job brings purpose, identity, and self-worth to us. Now, jobs are good things. God blesses us with jobs. They enable us to support our families, to put food on the table. And even more than that, the jobs are the places that God sends us. God sends us to our jobs to spread His good news, to spread His kingdom. But when our jobs are the goal, when our success and identity in the jobs is what our objective is, rather than the reason that God has sent us into the jobs, then our jobs become our Egypts. That doesn't mean that when our jobs are tough, when we're under stress and pressure, that we just say, all right, I'm out of here, I'm back to Egypt. Now sometimes, just like Moses, the wilderness, our jobs, are tough places. But we're sent there to represent God. We're sent there to spread the love of God in our jobs. But how do we handle our tough situations? Do we throw in the towel and say, I want to go back to Egypt? Do we say, well, it's up to me to sort it out? Or, like Moses, do we just hand the problems to God and let Him solve them? So if we think about it, are our jobs our Egypt or part of God's plan? There are many other Egypts, the things that we're clinging to, the things in our lives that are preventing us from living free. Some of us, it might be addictions. It might be some of the serious addictions, drugs, alcohol, gambling, all things that we don't even realize that we're addicted to. Social media, being busy. Some people cram so much in their lives. And I think with all of addictions, we're afraid of escaping. We're afraid of being free. Because if we're without the things that consume us, we're going to have to face the realities of our lives. We're going to have to face the reality of being ourselves. We're going to have to then shine a light on our own lives. And when we shine a light on our lives, we're going to have to stand up to God and say, well, look at the mess in my life. For others, we're too afraid to be without the things that are enslaving us because we don't know what's going to fill that hole. We don't know what's left when we strip away the things that we're addicted to. But we know what will fill that hole. We know that only Jesus and a life with Jesus can fill that hole. But we still struggle to let go. We still can't let go of those Egypts. Which brings me to the second reason that God made His people wander around for 40 years. They didn't trust God. They needed to spend 40 years to learn to trust Him. Somehow, the Israelites didn't believe that God could or would provide for them. God rained down manna from heaven, like food falling out of the sky, but they still didn't believe that God would provide for them. So when God provided them with manna, He said, only take that which you need for the next day. Don't store it up. Just take what you need. Because tomorrow, I'm going to bring you more manna. But the Israelites didn't trust God. I mean, if I see food coming down from the sky, I'm pretty much going to trust the God that sent the food. But they couldn't. They stored up as much as they could store. And the excess actually poisoned them. It actually made them ill. And the excesses in our lives are also making us ill. We do the same thing. We also do it in various ways. Some of us store our resources physically. We have big bank accounts. We gather property. We gather investments. Just so that we can have enough in case God doesn't provide. We do it, and therefore we don't follow God. We say, when I have enough, then I'll do what God's asking me to do. When I have enough, when my family is secure, then I'll start tithing. Then I'll be obedient to God. I mean, 10% is a lot of money, you know? And after all, I mean, charity begins at home. I need to make sure that my family's okay first. I need to make sure that they're educated, that, you know, when they're independent one day and when I've got enough for my retirement, when everything's sorted, then I'll do what you're asking me to do. And all it's saying is, I don't trust you, God. When we live beyond our means and when we live on our excess, it just says, God, I don't trust you. I don't trust you to provide. And as a result, the excess is actually poisoning us. We're stressing and worrying about our finances because we don't trust God's provision. Now, being sensible about money is a good thing. Providing for your families, educating your families, making them secure is a good thing. But we need to challenge whether what we're doing is being disobedient to God because we don't trust His provision, or whether what we're doing is being sensible. After the first service, Peter shared something which I think is really helpful. He says we need to give God what is right, not what is left. Being obedient might mean changing our lifestyles. Instead of living in some massive property that the world sees, yep, you've made a success of your life, it might mean downscaling, living in something simpler. Instead of having the latest, greatest car and swapping it every 3 years, it might mean having a second-hand car and actually looking after it. Instead of having DSTV, it might mean talking to your family at night or playing a game with your kids. As with Israelites, God provides for our needs, but not our excesses. And part of the wandering in the wilderness for 40 years was God's way of teaching the Israelites to learn how to live on His provision, learning to live on the manna and the water. So we need to think about what's our manna and water and what's our excess. Where are we not trusting God to provide? So unlearning Egypt and learning to depend on God were two major reasons that God had the Israelites wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years. But there was something even more important that God taught the Israelites during those 40 years. Something far more important. And that's the final reason. God Himself. Living in the wilderness wasn't easy. It was tough. It could be lonely. It could be hard. But in the wilderness, they got to experience and to be with God. In the wilderness was where they learned to be in a relationship with God. And that was more important than anything else. Now, as many of you know, I've just come back from Jordan, where we spent time speaking to families who had fled Syria. They had fled their homes. A lot of their homes had just been bombed, decimated cities. They'd left everything behind, their jobs, their families. In fact, a lot of them had lost family members. And now they were sitting in Jordan. Some of them had been sitting in Jordan for 3 years. A lot of them wanted to go back to Syria, no matter what. They said, we just want to go back. We don't care that there's nothing left. We don't care that our homes have been, you know, razed to the ground. We just want to go back. Syria was their Egypt. They kept longing for what they had left. For others, they just wanted to be anywhere else. They saw themselves as sort of being in limbo, being in a wilderness where nothing to do, nowhere to go. But for us who were there, we were so blessed to see how many people during that time came to know Jesus. It was during a time where they had nothing, they were sitting and waiting, that their hearts were in a space where they could see Jesus, where they could accept him. So during this time of nowhere land, they received the greatest gift of all, and that was salvation. And had they been in Syria or had they been somewhere else, they might not ever have been in a position where they would have welcomed Jesus into their lives. So their wilderness was where they met and they came into relationship with Jesus. But too often we focused on the end goal. We focused on getting to heaven, or we focused on what God has mapped out for our lives. I always say that God has a really good sense of humor. When I started studying theology, all I wanted to know was, okay, so what's the plan? I'm going to study, and then I'm going, no, God hasn't given me the plan afterwards. I kept praying, kept asking, so what do you want me to do when I've finished? You've asked me to give up my job. You've asked me to give up my security. You've asked me to study theology. Now tell me what you want me to do with it. Do you want me to become a pastor? No. Okay. Do you want me to become a missionary? No. What do you want me to do? But now looking back, it's been 3 years, and I realize what an amazing experience it has been. I've come to know more about myself. I've come to know more about Jesus. But more than that, I've grown in my relationship with Jesus. I'm just allowed to be with him, to do nothing else, to have no other end goal that I need to achieve, no project plan. I just get to be. It's, how I describe it, the best way I think I can describe it is like getting married. When I first met Mark, it's 20 years ago, it's frightening, I didn't suddenly start planning a wedding. I can only imagine if on the first date I'd rocked up and like, okay, Mark, we've got a plan now. We need to get from first date to wedding in about a year or two. How do we do this? I can guarantee you, if I had done that, I would never, ever have seen Mark ever again. I think he would have changed universities or cities or something. But instead, we spent time together. It was about getting to know somebody. It was about building a relationship with somebody. Because building a relationship with somebody was better than anything else. It was better than doing anything else, and it was better than being with anybody else. And then when the wedding did arrive, yeah, it was a nice event. It was happy. We got to share the commitment we were making to each other with everybody else. But again, it didn't end there. Mark might think life ended there, but it didn't. Now that we are married, that journey has continued. We've continued to learn about each other, to get to know one another. And it's the same with our journey with Jesus. It's about getting to know him, the man Jesus. It's about being on a journey with him, no matter where the journey goes. It's not about the destination. It's who you're with. It's who you're spending that journey with. And it can be tough. Like marriage is tough. Being in a relationship with Jesus can also be tough. It can also be lonely, like in the wilderness. And sometimes I'm confused. I'm even hurt by Jesus when I don't understand why he's done something or why he's not done something. But the more I spend with him, the more I understand him, the more I understand his reason. Some of them I'll never understand until one day when I meet him. But it's learning to trust Jesus, learning to talk to him, to spend time with him. It's learning to depend on him, but it's more than that. It's learning to be with him. And Grant said to me on Thursday when we were talking about the sermon, it's like Jesus is teaching us about him so that one day when we get to heaven, it's not going to be like, everybody's worshiping Jesus. Everybody's in a relationship with Jesus, but I don't know who this man is. That would be really, really weird. We're on a journey of getting to know Jesus, of being with him. The end goal isn't heaven. The end goal is being in a relationship with Him. So Moses is wandering in the desert. It wasn't about getting to the promised land. It wasn't about fulfilling a purpose that he thought God had for him. It was about being with God on a journey, depending on Him. Can you imagine, every time you go to God and you say, my people are hungry, food rains down. My people are thirsty, you hit a rock, water comes out. He learned to be with God, to be in a relationship with Him. The point of our journey is not to get to heaven, it's to be with Jesus. So as I close, I'm just going to ask that we all spend a quiet time of prayer, just to reflect on our own journeys. You just close eyes. I'm going to ask the elders and Inga, maybe you as well, to come and pray with anybody that would like prayer. Some of you this morning might not yet know Jesus. You might still be in Egypt. And maybe this morning you're ready to leave Egypt, ready to allow Jesus to rescue you so that you can join Him on His journey. And if you'd like to get to know Jesus, be on a journey with Him, just come forward. Let us pray with you. And if you're not comfortable coming forward, go to the back or come after the service. And some of you this morning might be clinging to your Egypt. Just where you are, quietly confess your Egypt to God. Just ask Him to free you from your Egypt, whatever they may be. Just open your hands. Release your Egypts to God. Some of you might be struggling to depend on God, struggling to let go and trust Him. Just open your hands and release yourself into God's plan for your life. Some of you may be too focused on your plans and God's plans for you that you're missing out on the journey. You're missing out on the relationship with Jesus. Just open your hands and feel the presence of God. Just spend some time just being with God.